Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. I hope you're very well. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm a paediatric therapist and I'm the director of Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited and its sister training company for therapists, the Child Hypnotherapy Institute. And I've recently been diagnosed autistic myself. So I'm very inspired to bring you a diverse and rich range of autistic voices from the community. People who are diagnosed, people who are not diagnosed, people who work alongside and collaborate with autistic families or autistic adults, people who identify as neurodivergent. Please come and join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at Evelyn, that's Evelynne, at childhypnotherapyinstitute.com, or contact me via the show. Thank you for joining me with Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. Hello, listeners. You're listening to Evelyn Charmer on Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. Hope you're all having a lovely day or evening out there in this lovely autumn that we're having in the UK. And if you're elsewhere in the world, I hope you're having a wonderful weather experience too. My guest of the week is Guy Walsh. Welcome to the show. Hi, Guy.
Hi, Evelyn. Thank you. That was the most British intro you can do, talking about the weather.
The weather, absolutely. And you're a man of many talents, of which we will unfold as the chat goes on. But you're known for your Guy Walsh photography, aren't you, at the moment?
Yeah, at the moment. At the moment being the operative phrase. Like a lot of people with neurodivergence or particularly with ADHD, I've done a lot. Currently, my photography business is my main focus, no pun intended, but there are always many, many irons in the fire, and so you never know what's coming next.
Yeah, and I love that. I'm going to talk about gratitude shortly, as I always do at the top of the show, but I just wanted to, on your Guy Walsh photography website, there's a fantastic photo of you holding what looks like an Oscar. And it says, I've managed call centres and pizza shops, coordinated large-scale trade union conferences, helped people with mental health needs get back to work, stood on street corners handing out free dog food samples, and even worked sustainably as a professional actor. And apart from that, you and I, many moons ago, both worked for the same charity, didn't we, in Brighton?
Yeah, it was pretty much bang on 10 years ago, actually, that I started there.
Yes, we both worked for Safety Net, listeners, which is a child safety charity based in Brighton and Hove, which has done amazing work and continues to do incredible work for children and young people. I was there at that point. I was there for about 10 years in a variety of roles. And when you and I worked together, I was there as a training manager.
That's right, yeah, and I was doing the administration for it all.
You were.
So yeah, I was your little admin elf.
You were my admin elf and a massive part of the work, because without you, none of it would have made any sense. No one would have been paid and various other things. So it's lovely to see you again. And we've kind of kept in touch at a distance over the years. And it's interesting, neither of us at that time knew that we were neurodivergent.
No, it's brand new for me. It's less than 18 months.
Yes, same. So, you know, we're both in a similar position, and that's what's brought us back together to do this show together. So I'm really, really pleased about that. I've got to mention, and I'm not, you know, I'm always cautious of kind of over advertising my own work and my own business through this show, but I'm really grateful to have won a Yorkshire Prestige Award for my therapy work with children and young people who are neurodivergent, Ed Elf Child Therapy.
I saw that. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm featured in the Health Triangle magazine, which is a subscription online magazine. If anyone's interested, go and have a look. It's organised through UK Health Radio. And they've done a feature on me this month in the November issue about that award. I won the Children's Complementary Therapy Clinic of the Year, which is really exciting. And not necessarily for me, it's exciting for me because I think it's really important work that people who are neurodivergent get access to really good quality therapy with people who understand neurodivergence, and that it's really appropriate to their need. So I'm going to do a whole show on that, I think, because lots of people ask me about it. So that's what I'm grateful for this week. What about you, Guy?
Oh, I'm grateful for a lot of things. A few years ago, I had a cancer scare, and it was nothing. It was clear. It was me overreacting. But what happened at that time was I sort of had this moment of clarity with things, because there was a part of me that, again, my ADHD brain had accelerated to the point of, what if I'm no longer here? And I sort of started to look back on my life, and I realized that I've done so much in my life that I've had a really bright, vibrant life that a lot of people will not have done 10% of. And I'm so grateful for that. And it's just something that I guess is kind of a part of my ADHD, but also the reason I was able to do it was because of the people I've had around me, the support I've had around me, my friends, particularly when I was living in Brighton. I'm no longer there. I was there for 13 years, and those people inspired me to be able to go out and be myself and do all these wonderful things. So assuming, you know, gratefulness for all the other usual things, family, friends, safety, security, housing, all those sorts of things, I'm just generally grateful for the life I've had.
Yeah, and continue to have, thankfully, that your cancer scare was nothing, although it wasn't nothing. You know, it wasn't what you were dreading.
No,
it
really was literally nothing. It was there's a whole backstory to this. It actually turned out to be a back injury, believe it or not.
Okay.
So it was an injury that I had in my back from childhood that was presenting as pain in my front, and my doctor had said, well, given where it's presenting, we need to get you going, get you checked out. So a long series of, I think it took about another 18 months after that before I finally found out what it was. So it literally was nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that, because the thing is, especially sort of through and post COVID and continuing COVID, because let's say we're not over it yet, I think people's waiting lists for finding out test results, getting tests done, is really scary. And it's nobody's fault that these waiting lists exist. It's just the way it is. But I know people, including my mum and my uncle, who have been waiting for a really long time with that kind of thought in mind that it's potentially life-threatening or potentially cancerous. And so for anybody out there who's going through that, we're with you, you know, in spirit, because we know how torturous that can be.
So I actually recorded, at the time I recorded an anxiety diary, a little vlog on my phone. I've never released it. I've got the videos, but I've never actually edited them down and put them into a video. But I may do that at some point, because, again, at the time I didn't know it was ADHD. So I put my reaction down to anxiety, and I've actually saved it in a folder that says anxiety diary. And I think it'd be quite interesting probably for me to look back now, because it was pre-COVID. Mm. It was a while back.
Yeah.
And it'd be really interesting to look back and go, well, just look at my reactions, because look at how anxious I was. And I have to say that because it was pre-COVID, it was a pretty quick turnaround as well from you need to get this checked out to getting it checked out. I think it was less than a month. But yeah, it was a pretty torturous few weeks.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what you've touched on there in terms of keeping a sort of a voice diary or a video log of anxious experiences is really useful. I think it can be a really useful tool. I know I had a period of really high stress once in my life, and it really helped me. I think it was even pre-mobile phones, but it was, I remember keeping a sort of voice diary of my anxiety on a dictaphone at
Wow.
the time. And I never listened to it, but it was a way of processing things that I was finding really difficult to process.
I think early on, I did it through song. So I used to be a songwriter. I haven't written anything for a while now, although I do plan on recording an album in the not too distant future. But I used to write all my lyrics down. I used to have notepads everywhere. I'd have a number of them in my car. I'd have them in my bedroom. I'd have them everywhere I went. And often I'd be driving down the motorway, and I would get a lyric idea and I'd write it down. And when I look back, I've kept all of them. And when I look back through my lyrics, I can see all my troubles.
Oh,
growing up.
Amazing. I don't think I want to look back on mine.
No, okay. It's funny, there are some great songs in there, but I don't want to perform them because they bring back too many bad memories.
Yeah, well, this is it, isn't it? Music's really evocative as well, and we really relate to that. So going back to what you've said already, you've mentioned ADHD a couple of times. Tell listeners, what is your personal experience of discovering your neurodivergence, Guy?
Well, for years, I've had an empathy with any kind of diverse groups or groups that are non-mainstream. And my partner worked for 10 years in a special needs school. And so she's used to working with autistic kids and severely disabled and severely autistic young people. Where I worked before I started working with you, I was working in mental health, but we also had a day center for adults with learning disabilities. And again, I really enjoyed being around them, and I kind of had this empathy for them and what have you. And during that time, I did training on mental health, and it didn't really talk about ADHD or autism because I don't know what the class is classed as physical or mental health or what, but for whatever reason I didn't get that training. But there'd always been a part of me that wondered if I was ADHD without really knowing anything about it, because there were just times when I would get really, really, really hyper. And it kind of came to a head mid-pandemic, like a lot of people, when I started going on TikTok. And it's fascinating because I didn't go on TikTok to find ADHD stuff. I went on TikTok because it had been recommended to me as a business tool, as a tool for promoting my business. So initially the idea was that I would just learn to understand how TikTok works. And of course, TikTok's very clever. What it does is it throws out what is a fairly, when you first join, it throws out a fairly random amount of stuff at you, and then it provides more content based on how long you watch a video, whether you like it, and whether you subscribe to the follower or not. So it's quite clever in terms of it works out quite quickly what stuff you're likely to watch, because it obviously wants you to stay on the platform. And I must have quite early on just seen a couple of ADHD videos and gone, oh, that kind of feels familiar, because they're very clever and very funny as well, a lot of the creators on TikTok. And it started putting more and more ADHD related content into my feed, and the more it did it, the more I related to what these people were saying. So I thought, well, okay, let's see if I can find an assessment tool online. Of course, it turns out there are lots online. They're not clinical assessments, but they are indicators. There's quite a lot of good indicators. So I did a series of them. Most of them are the kind of NHS pre-screening form, but there are some that are a little bit more detailed as well. And I did all of these, and all of them, every single one of them, came up with fairly high markers, with very high markers in a lot of areas and fairly high markers in others. And I started to think, well, this sounds like it is ADHD. And then the more I watched on TikTok, and the more I started to think about my own experiences and how they related to what the TikTokers were saying, the more I realized that I was ADHD. And it just got to a point where I went, this is now beyond doubt, to the point where I went to my boss and I said to my boss, I'm ADHD. I've just discovered this and I want to tell the team. So I told him on a team meeting, on a Zoom call. But yeah, it just got to the point where it was just beyond all doubt. And I initially wasn't going to go for a diagnosis, because initially I was thinking, well, at this point I'm 42 or 41, I think I was at the time. And I had got this far in life, and I thought, well, you know, I'm okay. I won't do anything about it for now, but it's nice to know. And then as time has gone on, I've done what a lot of people tend to do, which is I've started to unmask. And that has been liberating, but has also created some issues at the same time. Mm-hmm. So my next step is to obtain a diagnosis and see what that does for me, really, but with no expectation. I'm still very much of the mindset of I'm sort of very accepting as a person of whatever life throws at me, and whatever happens happens. But you know, if I can get support, if I can do something with that diagnosis, fantastic. But otherwise, nothing really changes, because I've been self-employed for so long that I've just always controlled my own environment anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I just ask a quick question? When you did talk to your manager about it and talk to your team at the time, what was their reaction?
So you know who my manager was. My manager is a mutual friend of ours as well. And, you know, unsurprisingly, I'm part of a very good, very empathetic team. And looking back, actually, I think part of the reason I've been able to sort of, in quotes, get away with having ADHD for so long is because I've had a series of very good, very empathetic bosses, which has meant that whenever I've said I've needed something, they've been able to accommodate it, or they've been empathetic and they've listened. And that was true very much in the job I was in at the time when I discovered I got ADHD. So so in terms of speaking directly with my manager, she was fantastic about it. She said, great, if you want to tell people, then go for it, but there's no pressure to it. It's completely up to you, whatever you think is work right for you. And then when I did tell the team, again, there was no judgment there. It didn't really, I don't think in the overall scheme of things, it really affected things, other than it did, again, it just kind of explained why I do things the way that I do, because I can be quite, I've always felt as an employee, I'm quite difficult to manage, because I know what I want and I know how I want to do it. And again, in hindsight, that's now because I've always been able to manage my ADHD on my own, but I've never known it's ADHD. So to other people, that comes across as being quite stubborn and quite, I guess, authoritarian in a way, or I guess arrogant could be more appropriate, because when you're being authoritarian and you're not in a position of authority, that's quite an arrogant thing to do. So yeah, my team were really, really empathetic, really understanding, and it really couldn't have gone much better. They listened, they asked questions, they said, you know, anything you need to do, just let us know. But yeah, there wasn't really any kind of major fallout from that, and I don't think, ultimately looking back, that anything really change that hugely as a result.
Yeah. Well, let's go into a break. We're going to listen to some music of your choice. You've chosen Keep On Going by Andrew WK. Do you want to just let me know why you chose this particular track?
Yeah, so Andrew WK is this won't be to everyone's taste. It's quite heavy, but Andrew WK has been a big influence on my life since quite a young age. I discovered him. Most people will know the song Party Hard, and he's kind of known as the Party King. But actually, a lot of his work is a lot more, I don't know what the word is. There's a lot more to it than that. And this is from his last but one album. And it's actually my wake up alarm in the morning. because the lyrics just remind me, you've got to keep going. You've got to get up. Wow. And you've got to keep going.
Well, let's give it a listen. It's new to me. And listeners, if you don't like the track, that's fine. Go and make yourselves a cuppa, and we'll come back, speak to Guy in just a moment.
Screams, but she kept on going anyway. Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, listeners, to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm speaking with Guy Walsh today about all sorts of fascinating things. So welcome back, Guy.
Thank you.
Okay, so before the break, we were just chatting briefly about your discovery of ADHD, and thank you for sharing that with us. So in terms of that, would you say that there's been any, looking back on your life and having discovered ADHD sort of in your early 40s, would you say there's been any limitations, missed opportunities or anything that would have been different or could have been different had you discovered at an earlier age?
Yeah, I think when I look back at my life, I always see missed potential. You know, everything I've done, I've sort of done to a certain level and then either walked away from it or gone to do something new or it's just not worked out. And I think that it's a tricky question because I know, again, looking back, I know what I wanted to do. I know how I wanted to do it, but a lot of the time I wasn't in a position to do it. Had I been able to explain that I had ADHD, I still don't know if it would have changed an awful lot because the times then aren't what they are now. And I'm not sure that people would have been as accommodating to my needs as I would have wanted, because workplaces can often be quite authoritarian in that respect. And this is the way we work. This is how we do it. And we do it because we know it costs this amount and we know that we get the outputs of this amount and therefore productivity is this. So if you deviate from that, then you can be seen as a problematic employee. So hopefully now we're moving to a more compassionate, understanding world where, with things like access to work as well, businesses are more willing and understanding to make those changes and to listen to definitely. Employees. But I do wonder, I mean, I don't know, because I say I had such a lack of awareness of it back then. I don't know if actually it would have made that big a difference.
It's hard to know, isn't it, as well, retrospectively, what would have been different or not. And you're right as well, we're learning more all the time about what it means to be neurodivergent, and everyone's so different as well that there isn't a kind of one book that you can read or one lecture you can go to or one, you know, webinar that you can sort of watch and then go, okay, I'll get this now as an employer or colleague or whatever.
Well, I think for me, it comes down to empathy. Everything comes down to empathy for me. And like I said, I certainly from 2009 onwards, I had the most amazing bosses.
Yeah.
Who were empathetic and understanding, and they adapted to my needs
and they did that without question. You didn't have to give them a piece of paper with a diagnosis on it. And at that point as well, you weren't even thinking along the lines of neurodivergence. And
no, I mean, I wouldn't say without question. There were some battles along the way to get things done that way.
Okay.
And again, that's probably where the difference would be. If I could say I need to do this because I've got ADHD, would it then frighten them into to to thinking, oh no, we don't want to go against the Disability Discrimination Act, and would they listen more, or would they have made those changes more easily? You just don't know with these things. Ultimately, it's got, you know, generally anything that I've wanted in my career, again in quotation marks because I'm not really sure it is a career, my bosses have generally been very, very accommodating of that, so I've been very fortunate in that respect.
Yeah, and I'm going back to what you said. If you treat people with empathy and respect and you listen to what they're saying their needs are, and you try your best to meet those needs within reason, then it doesn't matter what people are diagnosed with or not at the end of the day.
I mean, I've always been very person-centered. Yes. I actually did person-centered counselling course back in 2008. But again, it kind of just really kind of restated my own mindset to me, a lot of it. But the I think for me, one of the biggest things is, and I say this quite a lot, one of the worst pieces of advice that is widely given out in the world is treat other people as you would like to be treated. And it's terrible, because the advice should be treat other people as they would like to be treated.
Oh, very good. I like that.
If you drink tea and I drink coffee and I bring you a cup of coffee because that's what I want if I was having a drink, you're not going to be happy because you drink tea, you don't drink coffee. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can apply that to any situation. And that's what happens is we think, okay, well, I would like things this way. We make an offer and we say, well, I'm going to give you this. And then if people reject it, we see that as rude because we've done something for them and they've rejected our offer. But actually what we've done is we've not listened to their needs in the first place.
Yes.
And that applies to so much of life, not just work, not just relationships, but every area of life.
I like that. It's a really good one. I'm going to use that in the write up for the show. But also, it reminds me of conversations that I have with, I train therapists, hypnotherapists for a self-employed, but for an organization called Chrysalis, who are fab. And one of the things that I try to encourage in the learning is that it's really easy to try to treat people as though you would treat yourself, and that we have to remember that even if someone who's coming to us for therapy and help has similar issues or experiences as us, it doesn't mean that they need the same that we would have needed or did need at the time. So it is all about being person-centered, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And not projecting yourself onto those people's needs. But let's move on, because I really want to talk about some of the amazing creative stuff that you do. Okay. And what you're passionate about, because as I started with at the top of the show, you're a man of many talents, and it's not just that you try loads of different things, and I've always admired you for that. It's that you're really good at them as well, Guy. So, you know, you're brilliant at whatever you turn your hand to, you seem to be really good at. But I know that your creative side and your creative brain is just on fire, and you've done so many things, acting, you do wonderful photography, you've been involved in the wrestling world. Yep. As well, which you can talk about.
I tried to teach myself guitar from a book once, which was just did not go well at all. And then when I went to uni, one of my friends taught me to play guitar, and I always knew I wanted to be in a band. I was in a band in my 20s, and we really loved what we did to the point where it really came off on stage, and we performed. And when I was growing up, I think all my ADHD energy went into football, because every evening I'd play football. And then when I hit my 20s, I stopped playing football and I started playing guitar and playing in bands. And when we were on stage, I got myself a wireless guitar receiver, and I would literally jump off the stage and go and dance in the crowd with people while we were playing. And that's kind of where it all started, really. And as well as I mentioned earlier, as a kind of therapy for me, writing lyrics and things and what have you. But then when I hit 30, I trained as an actor, and that completely changed my life. You would not recognize 29-year-old me from 30-year-old me in terms of the self-confidence and self-esteem. And that fuels a lot of the work that I do now. One of the key moments was I was living in a shared house, and I was living I was having a conversation with my flatmate, Faye. And I remember it really clearly, because this is such a key moment in my life. And I was talking to her and I said, I really fancy like having a go at acting. And she said, well, why not? And that those two words were just so powerful for me, because I'd always been around people who, whenever I'd said I wanted to do something new, always said, why? Why? Yeah. What's the point in that? Why do you want to do that? To the point where it kind of made you feel like, well, I should accept this crappy life with all these mundane, boring things going on. And then to suddenly sort of hearing these words, why not? It made me think, why not? And I was like, and the taster course was only 60 quid or something at the time. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it a go. And I did this taster course, and it wasn't just that I learned acting skills. I learned so much about myself, and it gave me the confidence to go out and perform and to be an actor. But it also put me in situations where I would not normally have put myself. And this is one of the things I do now. I have some courses called Acting Skills for Life through one of my other businesses, which is called ZLS Creative. And it's where I teach a lot of this stuff, because I would never have come across it otherwise. And the example I always give is there was this one activity in this workshop whereby I was standing in a circle. Across the circle was a very attractive girl. And the objective of this exercise was that when the tutor shouted go, you cross the circle, the tutor would then shout out an emotion, and the two of you would play out that emotion in the circle and then go back to your corners. So everyone else was getting things like happy, angry, aggressive, all these different emotions, and I'm just standing there, and I'm standing there thinking, please don't say lust, please don't say lust, please don't say lust. And she says lust, and so we step out, and what happened was we flirted. You know, it was as simple as that. You know, it wasn't anything more than that. And it was just an acting exercise, but we flirted. And I had never done that before. And I suddenly went, wow, that's how you do it. And it was a realization for me that that's just one example, but from acting, one of the kind of thing I realized was the only reason I hadn't done the things I wanted to do was because I hadn't done them. I hadn't started. I hadn't taken any steps towards them at all. And from that moment, I decided, I'm just going to do stuff.
Yeah, I love that.
And it started with life stuff. Like, I came out of the acting course, and I just started going on loads of dates, which, again, was something that I would never have done. And eventually I met my current partner, who I've been with now for 11 years. And then that whole mentality of, well, let's just do stuff, just carried on. And I decided that whenever I wanted to do something, I was going to give it a go. And that's really how I got started.
So, yeah, I really love that kind of why not. And look where it's led you. It's not only led you to building in confidence, it's led you to build your skill set, but it's also led you to your long-term partner. Fantastic. Well, listen, we're going to listen to your second song of choice, You Are Not Alone by Andrew WK. Any reason for choosing this one?
Just the message behind it again. You know, Andrew WK, particularly that album, the album is called You're Not Alone, is just so wonderfully, I mean, you've got to like the music, you've got to like the genre for it, but lyrically, it's just so uplifting. And this was kind of his way of ending the album and just saying that, you know, no matter what happens, I'm here with you. And it's funny and as cliched and as weird as it sounds, I've kind of always felt like Andrew WK is there with me. And sometimes his music will come on randomly when I'm in the gym or when I'm on my own or when I'm in the car or what have you. And it does fire me back up when I'm low, when I least expect it. So, yeah, this is a song really for anybody who feels like they're struggling and for anybody who is going through the things that we've been talking about. And I hope it resonates with you.
station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, listeners. I hope you enjoyed You Are Not Alone by Andrew WK. That was a lovely intro from you, Guy. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've talked about all sorts of things, but the one thing that I want to talk about right now is wrestling. How on earth did you go from songwriting to working in charities to doing accounts and admin to what you were just talking about before, then doing your acting courses to, we'll go on to your photography in a minute because I know that's your current main business. Wrestling. What do you do and how did you get into it?
Now, this is... I don't think I really have any regrets in life. Going back to what we were talking about earlier with gratitude, the thing that I'm grateful for is that I have had a go at everything I've wanted to have a go at in my life. And the reason I mention that is because the only thing that I would take back is I wish I had started wrestling 10 years prior to when I did. Yeah.
Awesome.
Because I was just a few weeks shy of my 39th birthday when I started wrestling training. And for those, obviously, this is an audio podcast. I am not an athlete by any stretch of the imagination. I'm overweight. I'm completely inflexible. And I just do not have any kind of tone or muscle on me at all. I have what they call a dad bod these days. And what happened was I got to the point where it was reaching my late 30s and I'd done everything I wanted to do, or I'd had a go at everything I wanted to do, I should say, in terms of performance and acting. I'd done comedy, I'd done acting, I'd done immersive stuff, I'd made a living out of acting. The one thing I hadn't done was wrestling. Now, when I first started, my intention was never to become a wrestler. I just wanted to be in the wrestling industry. Now, there isn't much of a wrestling industry in this country versus, for example, America, where it's a huge, huge thing. The industry in this country is fantastic. It's a really high quality. There's something going on in every town. However, there's not really much of a way of making a living from it. And I just thought, well, I'd like to get involved either as a manager, a commentator, a ring announcer, just do something in this world and find out what it's actually like being part of it. Now, the wrestling industry can be quite difficult to break into. And certainly at that time, I didn't know what I know now. So I thought, well, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to find a local wrestling school and I'm going to go along there's a big thing of respect in the wrestling industry and you have to pay your dues. And I thought, well, okay, let's go along. Let's do some wrestling training. Let's learn a little bit about it. Let's learn. And it is an art. And I would argue that with anybody, it's absolutely an art form. I'll learn the art and then I'll pay my dues and hopefully then just end up doing something else. Because I know as a performer, I can perform. I know you give me a mic. I can go out there and manipulate a crowd. What happened though, was I got to training and I suddenly found that I could do more than I thought I could do. And one of the things about wrestling is that everybody has limitations. Nobody can do everything. There's always, you know, people have got injuries. People have got injuries or things to do with their body that mean they can't do everything. So everybody has to adapt to everybody else. And effectively, I started training, and over this period of time, I got injured on a number of occasions. Nothing major, just little bits that would knock me back here or then, because my body was nearly 40, and you know, I wasn't as flexible as I was 10 years before that. Not that I was that flexible before. And during that time, I then started performing as Stickman McTaggart, who is the over-enthusiastic manager of Billy Zero. And we ended up in this scenario where basically my character was putting Billy Zero into matches against his wishes. That's now sort of come full circle. The story has come full circle. And on November 19th at Hastings, at Summerfield's Leisure Centre, I'm making my in-ring debut, whereby I'll be teaming with Billy in a tag team battle royal gauntlet. Now, the story is that Billy has now turned the tables on me, having me put him in matches for the last 4 years against his best wishes. He's now done the same to me. So it's another way of storytelling. It's utilizing those same skills that I was using as an actor and as a performer, in a way that I've just fallen in love with the wrestling industry. And when this match happens, it's going to mean a hell of a lot for me, because I never thought I would be in a wrestling match.
It's amazing. I'm hoping that my youngest son Noah is listening, because he's been a fan of wrestling since he could move. And he's 22 on Sunday, the 6th of November. So if you're listening, Noah, I hope you had a wonderful birthday, because by the time this goes out, it'll be past. But he's absolutely fascinated, and he's always wanted to get into it, as I did contact you about. So I'm hoping he's listening to this, because I think he also, I think, went to the same acting school as you. And when he was young, and he's told me that that's really helped him to develop confidence as a young man. But we digress. Tell me again, listeners will be really intrigued by this, as I am, your in-ring debut then.
It's happening at, it's EWW is the company. So it's EWW-wrestling.com if anyone's interested. Or you can find them on Facebook and Instagram and all the usual places. The show is called Invasion of the Body Slammers 11. It's the Halloween special every year. They do Invasion of the Body Slammers. I think it's 11 this year off the top of my head. But yeah, it's November 19th, and okay, it's at Summerfield's Leisure Centre. And the match I'm in is a tag team battle royal, which means there's going to be six teams in the battle royal. The winner is the team that is not thrown over the top rope. So you have to be eliminated by being thrown over the top rope, and the winners will be tag team champions. So, you know, who knows? My debut could see me walking out with a title.
Gosh, absolutely fascinating. This sounds amazing. Good luck with that. And, you know, let us know how it goes. You're always welcome back on the show, even if you're a champion wrestler by then.
Thank you.
Okay, well, Sorry, Evelyn.
The irony is actually that this is my scheduled debut. My debut actually came unexpectedly this last Saturday.
Oh, tell us more.
Yeah, so I was doing commentary for Fight Factory Wrestling, which is in Lincoln, and I was on the commentary desk, and there's a battle royal at the end of the show. The show's called Body Slams to Cancer. It's a fundraiser for various cancer charities. It raised over £3,000, and there's always a battle. It always ends with a battle. With a Royal Rumble. A Rumble. Can't say Royal Rumble. That's WWE trademark. So it ends with a Rumble. There's about 30 of us in the Rumble, and they came to me before the show because I've been training with Fight Factory. Initially, I trained with EWW, but now I've moved. I'm training with Fight Factory again. And they said to me, there's a spot in the Rumble. Do you want it? And I was like, I'm not really prepared for it. You know, there are certain things you have to do as a wrestler. I haven't shaved my pits. I haven't got a tan, all this sort of stuff. And they said, well, it doesn't matter, because you know, it's a rumble and you can be in and out as quickly as you like. Because I've been so nervous about the upcoming show on the 19th, I was like, you know what? Give me a chance to have a go before that. And I haven't got any time to worry about it now, because I'm going to be on commentary in a few hours. So I've got no time to think about it. I'll just have to get into the rumble and then get out again. And so I did it. I went in, I did my little bit. I was in there for about a minute. I went in, went after somebody that I'm in a feud with, and then got thrown out. And I managed to do it without injuring myself. So that's given me confidence.
Your friend, your old flatmate Faye would have been impressed. That was a definite why not, and you jumped in. Yeah. I love that guy. We're literally coming towards the end of the show. I could talk to you for hours. I just find you so fascinating and wonderful. And but let's talk about your photography for a little bit. So how can people find you? What sort of photography do you offer, etc.?
My photography services, so primarily I offer event photography and business photography. I do that all around the UK. I do corporate events. I just want to put it out there. I don't do weddings. There are lots of many wonderful wedding photographers out there, and I am not generally a fan of weddings, so I'm not doing them. As simple as that. But corporate events, parties, anything like that, I'm available for. The business photography, personal branding photography, so freelancers and business owners who need some headshots done, need some shots of their office, their ambience, their team, their, you know, their products, whatever it is in their business, I'm available for all those sort of things. And that's all at guywalshphotography.co.uk. I also have a YouTube series, which is called Landscape Adventures, where I go out, and it was exactly what it sounds. I take a little camcorder out with me, go out into the hills, and I do some landscape photography, and I record my adventures while I'm out there. So it's not a photography tutorial. It's just a nice way of discovering lots of different places around the country.
Oh, that's fantastic, Guy. Thank you for that. And if people want to find you on social media...
Yep, so Guy Walsh Photography everywhere. There's also ZLS Creative, which is where I talk about the Acting Skills for Life courses and the Creating a Character workshops that I run. You can find ZLS Creative on TikTok as well. That's the only one I've got a TikTok account. That's pretty much it, Guy Walsh Photography and ZLS Creative. And you'll find my other accounts. I've got four different photography brands. There's the UK cat photographer as well, because I do cat photography, and there's various other offshoots. And if you were interested in following the wrestling side of things, you can find Stickman McTaggart on all the accounts as well. And the organizations that I work for are EWW and Fight Factory Wrestling. So you can find those as well. I've put together a website, which is guywalsh.info, which contains information on everything. So that'll save you having to look around.
Oh, how fantastic. Okay, listeners, wasn't it been an interesting show? Thank you very much. You've been listening to Guy Walsh on Autistic Voices.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Thank you for listening. I'm Evelyn Charmer. This is Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. And special thanks to our guest of the week.